And we're holding on page Nun Dalet in Sukkah, about three lines from the bottom, near the beginning of Oishchav Vav. We're in the middle of learning the Mishnah that was talking about how they arranged things for the Simchas Beis HaSheva. The last thing we learned about the Tikkun Gadol that they put up, the balconies for the women, which we're going to talk about in more detail in the Gemara, about the giant candelabra that they had over there, and then all the illumination that they had. So now the Mishnah continues. Chassidim va'anshei ma'aser hoyim merakdim lifneihem. The Chassidim and the anshei ma'aser, the people who are noted for their ma'asim tovim, would dance in front of them. Now, in front of them can mean the onlookers. It can mean in front of the menorah. So there's a couple of different explanations. The point is that Amram writes that this was, being that it was a simcha shel mitzvah, it wasn't just open to anybody to come and dance and sing over there. It was reserved only, like the Mishnah says over here, for the Chassidim and anshei ma'aser. The Gemara points out also the Baalei Tshuva. This is another example that Eber talks about, where we have another example of Takanos and Kalkalosan, where here, we don't, on the one hand, we don't have the Bis Mikdash. On the other hand, anybody can join in the Simchas Beis HaSheva. It's not restricted to a certain class of people who deserve it. Anyway, so they would dance in front of them. Ba'avukas shel Orosh B'yadeim, holding torches in their hand, where Rashi explains they would juggle them. The Gemara gives examples of several Chachamim in later generations who also knew how to do that. And they would say before them words of song and praise to Hashem, which the Gemara will give examples of the kind of songs that they sang to Hashem. Meanwhile, the Levim would be accompanying them, bikinodis, with harps or violins, over nevolim, is another type of musical instrument, over mitzotayim, and with cymbals, over chatzotzeres and trumpets, over chol klei shir b'lo misper, and a numberless number of musical instruments. Where would the Levim stand at the time? Al tesvav milas hayodis me'ezras Yisrael le'ezras Nashim. They would stand on the 15 steps that led down from Ezras Yisrael to Ezras Nashim, the 15 semicircular steps that led down there from Shaul Nikonor to the Ezras Nashim. Keneged, why 15? Keneged tesvav shiramalas sheba sefer tilim. Those correspond to the 15 shiramalas in sefer tilim. Shalem umnim alavim, the clay shuv, umnim shira. The Levim then would stand on those steps, and they would be saying Shira. What's the connection, Davka, between the Shira Malus and these steps? So, of course, Malus itself means steps, so it's appropriate that they're standing on those steps. But Marsha points out, further on, when we get to it in the Gemara, we're going to talk about how we talked about it briefly in the previous parak, about how when David dug the shis in, he dug them thousands of amas deep, 15,000 amas deep. So therefore, corresponding, or actually to begin with, they were about to flood the earth, and then afterwards, David made them go down 15,000 amas and so forth. We're going to have the whole story. So in connection with, and then he had them go all the way down, then he had them rise up 15,000 amas, so they stay 1,000 amas below ground level. So therefore, in token of that, since the Nisuch HaMayim, again, has to do with that whole story, is why Davka, we have the 15 Shiramalis and the 15 steps over there. Marsha points out also, you know, we learned yesterday where the end of the Mishnah says that they would say Onu Laka or Laka Enenu. Why Davka? They're using the name Yud Kei for the same reason. That's also Gematria 15. So therefore, it was very appropriate to use at that time. In fact, later in the Mishnah, it also says that they would stand on the 10th step and they would blow three tkiyas over there. And the Gemara discusses, doesn't mean the 10th step from the top or the bottom, but again, the same idea, breaking up the steps into groups of 5 and 10, respectively, again, corresponding to the Yud and the Hey of Shem Yud Kei. Anyway, so Levim would stand on those steps, and they would say, and they would sing Shira, and they would play Shira, and meanwhile we're saying the Chassidim v'Anshei Ma'aser would be dancing and praising Hashem. So the Gemara says, my Tikkun Gadol. When we said in the Mishnah that they made a Tikkun Gadol, what is that exactly? What we mean is this was not an original part of the Beis Mikdash. This was something that was added afterwards. We learn in a Mishnah in Midas, Chaloka Hoysa Barishona, The walls of the Azara, particularly the Ezras Nashim, were originally smooth. There was nothing sticking out of the walls. The Kifur Gzuzdra, then later on, they surrounded it with a balcony. This way the women could see from up above, and the men would be standing down below, and this way it's nisted. So Rashi explains, like we learned yesterday, what they did is they put permanently into the walls, they had ledges sticking out of the wall, ledges or projections sticking out of the wall, and every year then they would put up wooden planks on those in order, and that would be the balcony. And again, like we talked about yesterday, since La Locha, you're not allowed to have permanent wooden structures in the Beis Mikdash, that's why they had to build it yearly. That's why they couldn't just leave it up there all year round. In the third Beis Mikdash, by the way, Yechezkel describes all around the third Beis Mikdash, as we learned last summer, is arranged much differently than the previous two Bate Mikdash, in particular the Ezras Nashim, which he describes, which he calls Chotzer Achitzona, surrounds the Ezras Yisrael and the Ezras Nashim, unlike in the second Beis Mikdash, they were side by side. And he describes over there a balcony that goes all around it. So maybe the idea, maybe in the third Beis Mikdash, that balcony will be there permanently, rather than, like we're saying, in the second Beis Mikdash, they had to rebuild it yearly. Anyway, so that's the Tikkun Gadol that they did every year for in preparation for Simchas Beis Hashem. So Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. The original arrangement was that the women would be inside in the Ezras Nashim. It's called the Ezras Nashim, after all, so it's the appropriate place for them. And the men would be on the outside, meaning Rashi says the men would be in the Chayil and in the rest of the Harabayis, and they would watch from there. But that led to inappropriate mingling between the men and the women, and that's a problem. So they tried to make it the other way around. The women will be on the outside, the men will be on the inside. You still have the problem of Kalos Rosh because they're still mingling. So they made the takana. The women sit higher up, the men lower down, and that way there's no problem of kalus rosh, and there's no problem of hear her because the men aren't going to be able to look up and see the women. In other words, if it was the other way around, if the women were on bottom and the men were on top, you'd still have, they'd be looking down, and it'd still be inappropriate kalus rosh. So therefore, they have to do it this way. One individual, I guess, is enough. But apparently, the Chachamim figured realized that it's a widespread enough problem. So Maharsha says, in other words, that this is why the Mishnah calls it Tikkun Gadol. In other words, because they had the original takana was a lesser takana to have the men on one side of the wall and the women on the other, whether the men inside and the women inside and the men outside or the other way around, was in retrospect that was a small takana. The great takana that made things work from then on is to have the balconies for the women, and this is where we get the concept of having a mechitza in shul. So the Gemara asks, v'heichi avdi hochi. Now, how could they do that? The point is, how could they add something to the Beis Mikdash? V'aksiv, doesn't the Pasuk say, Hakol b'ksav miyad Hashem olai hiskil? David says to Shlomo, when he's giving him the blueprint for the Beis Mikdash, everything in writing is from the hand of Hashem, who gave it to me to understand. So it's all min Hashemayim. Midrashim explained the details that it went down the generations, down to Shmuel, and then Shmuel gave it to David. The point is, in other words, it's exact. You can't add anything to it. So how are they adding these protrusions and these balconies over there? Because the Chachamim found a pasuk and they darshened it to show that this is a necessity for the Beis Mikdash, and therefore it's not considered adding, it's not considered an inappropriate addition to the Beis Mikdash. Pasuk says in Zechariah, the pasuk describes a tremendous mourning that's going to be la'asid lover, and the Gemara is going to explain soon what this mourning is. And the pasuk says, "V'safta eretz mishpachas mishpachas lavod." The whole land of Eretz Yisrael will be mourning family by family. Mishpachas beis David lavod u'nshem lavod v'gemer. The family of beis David, the men will be mourning alone, and the women and their wives alone. And then it lists several other families like that as well. And each one, it mentions that each one, you're going to have the men separate from the women, are going to be mourning. What they're going to be mourning for, we'll talk about soon. But anyway, the point is, Omru, so the Chachamim realized based on that pasuk, now we should make a kavachomer to see if in that circumstance, which is la osid lava, they need a separation between the men and the women. First of all, they're involved in mourning. The en yetzahara misgara behem, and the yetzahara is not going to try and attack them, because at a time like that, when people are mourning, then usually that keeps the yetzahara in check. So we're talking about in a period of loss of love when there still is a Yetzirah. But there are in fact different possibilities over here. The Rif and the Ir Yaakov talk about, do we mean, in other words, it's basically one thing we're saying. It's a time when, because there are Asuk and Behesped, so Rashi actually says they're two separate things. First of all, when a person is in Tsar, usually that itself keeps their Yetzirah in check. Second of all, and we're talking about a time, as the Gemara is going to explain soon, when Hashem is going to shech the Yetzirah. So there's not going to be a Yetzirah anymore. With that said, though, Iyun Yaakov and the Rif and other Mephoshim talk about the possibility that maybe it means it's really all one thing. What we're saying is at the time when, because of the Hesped, they're not really going to be, so the Yetzirah is not really going to be, is not really going to have much effect on them. And nevertheless, Omra Torah Noshim Levad Ba Noshim Levad. Nevertheless, as to the Torah is saying, the women and the men have to be separate. So now, when we're talking about Simcha Space and Sheva, when we're involved in Simcha, the Yetzirah is Gara Behenen. The Yetzirah is very active and very likely to get involved and to attack a person. Alachas Kama Vakama. How much more so that we have to do that? So therefore, it's an absolute necessity. Because there's simcha, it actually says simcha is very easily spills over into kalos surosh, and that's the whole point. We were saying before they're trying to avoid kalos surosh. So with all of that, alachas kama v'kama, how much more so that we need to put an absolute separation between the men and the women, and therefore, in other words, it's an absolute necessity for the Beis Hamikdash, and therefore that can override the rule to not add anything to the blueprint of the Beis Hamikdash. And again, this is where we get the concept of a mechitza and shul, and this is where we get that a mechitza is an essential thing in a shul, and without it, as we know, al pi halacha, without it, you don't have a shul. So why wasn't it in the original blueprint? Because originally, the Pashtus, because originally they were able to do it without the Mechitza. Originally, maybe when the Gemara is saying that Bodhishona, maybe when they're saying that Bodhishona and then his Skinu, maybe that was all yet during the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, at that time, it was enough to have the men on the outside and the women on the inside or the other way around, and it was working. Later on, the Chachamim realized that's not working out, and I can't add anything to the Beis Hamikdash, but this is essential, and therefore we have to add it. So maybe just push it until that point, they didn't have that problem.
Holier and more pure in those days.
Yeah, that's the point. It was in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash. Maybe they were on a higher, they were on a higher ruchniistic level. Maybe it wasn't as much of an issue. Yeah.
The architect of the building knew what's going to happen down the road.
Hashem knew what's going to happen, but Hashem left it up to the Chachamim to determine. Fine, but Hashem left it up to the Chachamim to determine when they find that's necessary. But Hashem does it. I mean, the truth is, there's an explanation in this connection. You know, yesterday actually we were learning in Yom Yom Mashiach Gola that Rebbe was commenting on when you have the pasuk Oid Yesh was Kenus Berchov was Yerushalayim, that there is going to come a point when there's less of a problem with that. So when we're saying Kol Chosin Kol Kala, etc., that there's going to come a point when that whole thing is less of an issue because that'll be in the time of Tchias Amesim. So the pastor so. Yeah, so that's the thing. So the Rebbe is saying that's talking about in the time of Tchias HaMesim, then the Yetzirah will be complete in this battle. So Bapashkus or Gemara is talking about before that time when the Yetzirah still exists, or like right at the time after Hashem has shechted it, as the Gemara is going to go on to say. So V'hai Hespeda Maya Vidde. What's the deal with this Hesped that the Navi is talking about in it? Pligibot Abdosa V'Rabbanim. So Abdosa and the Chachamim argue what they're going to be mourning about. One says they're going to be crying and mourning over Mashiach ben Yosef who was killed, and the other says that they're going to be crying over the Yetzirah was killed. What's the deal with Mashiach ben Yosef? So you have the basic idea, the same way as we have in the early history of the Jewish people. You had Yosef first was the leader, and afterwards Yehuda. So you have, when it comes to Asid Lavoi, you have also that there has to be, that there's supposed to be a Mashiach ben Yosef who precedes Mashiach ben David. Basically, Maharsha explains, the idea is you're going to have Mashiach ben Yosef, who's going to be the first one to work to save the Jewish people. And after all, we know, as the Gemara says, that ein Zarish al Esav Nimser el Abidei Yosef, that the descendants of Esav can only be defeated by the descendants of Rachel, of Yosef and Yamin. So therefore, that's going to be Mashiach ben Yosef's job, is to fight against them. But then, there's the whole Milchamas Gog and Magog with various other nations, not necessarily Edom, and he's going to be killed in that battle. Then comes Mashiach ben David and finishes up the job and Yivne Mikdash ben Mekoyim and the rest of that, and brings the, and when with him is the Golam Mitzvah Shleim. Now, there's an enormous amount of discussion about this in various Sforim. Rav Sadia Gaon is the first one who really deals with this whole concept of Mashiach ben Yosef at great length. He points out that it's not necessary. The Gemara is not saying necessarily that there has to be a Mashiach ben Yosef before Mashiach ben David. That's one of the possible ways. We find many different Gemaras and Midrashim. The Rambam famously comments in Hilchos Malachim. He says there's many different things. We don't know how they're going to happen until they actually happen. So Rav Sadia Gaon, 200 years before the Rambam, says Mashiach ben Yosef is one of those things. It might happen that way. It doesn't necessarily. And there's a lot of different places that it talks about in Sforim, ideas about it, including that it can be, for example, that Mashiach ben David incorporates within himself the neshama of Mashiach ben Yosef. So it's only one physical person, but he has the ma'alos of both Yosef and Yehuda. There are Sforim that bring based on the Zohar that eventually it was decided Lamaila that Hashem decided it's not necessary for there to be these two stages anymore. There just needs to be Mashiach ben David. There's various tzaddikim throughout Jewish history who have been identified as Mashiach ben Yosef. Famously, for example, they say about Rav Shlomo Kaliner, who was killed by a Cossack, that he was Mashiach ben Yosef. It's brought about a couple of other tzaddikim as well. It's said also, I've seen a report that the Rebbe said about the Friedrich Rebbe that he's Mashiach ben Yosef, but I don't know if that's Oiska Halton. I don't know if the Rebbe actually said that. And there's also an idea that Poshet, the fact that so many Jews have been killed throughout the generations, that itself is we were Yotze Mashiach ben Yosef being killed without needing any more of that. In fact, Rashi on the Pasuk in Zechariah actually says, when the Pasuk that the Gemara is going to quote now, that says that they're going to be looking at Hashem about the one that was stabbed and the Gemara who was killed, who the Gemara is going to explain over here was talking about Mashiach ben Yosef. Rashi on the Pasuk says, based on Targum Yonason, that it means that the Jewish people at that time we're going to be crying and mourning for all the Jews who were killed throughout all the time in Golos. So that would fit very well with this idea that they make up for Mashiach ben Yosef. Anyway, so that's one opinion. And the other opinion is about the Yetzer Hara being killed. In fact, the Rif talks about in some detail over here that maybe in fact the opinion that it's the opinion that says that it's about Mashiach ben Yosef also agrees that it's about the Yetzer Hara as well. So he would say there's two reasons anyway. So Bishleimel Amanda Amar Mashiach ben Yosef Shenerag. It's easy to understand the pasuk if we understand it talking about Mashiach ben Yosef was killed and everybody's going to be mourning tremendously for him. Shenemar Hainu Dachdiv. The pasuk says Vehibitu Eli Es Asher Drakoru. Hashem says they're going to look to me regarding the one who was stabbed. Meaning they're going to look at this person who was killed and stabbed in front of them. Vesafdu all of Kmisben Ala Yochid, and they'll mourn for him like a person would mourn for his only child. And they'll be bitter over him like the way a person would be bitter when his bechor passed away. So if it's Mashiach ben Yosef, that's easy to understand why it's going to cause such tremendous grief among the Jewish people. But if you say it's about that the Yetzer Hara was killed, but why are they making a hesped? Simcha bolameban. They should be making a simcha. My bochu. Why are they crying? And the answer is, k'dedorish Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Loi. The answer is, that opinion would say, like the way Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Loi darshins, la'osid lovei mevi'a HaKadosh Baruch Hu li'etzah hara v'shoich di b'fnei tzaddikim v'fnei rishoyim. In the future, Hashem will bring the Yetzer Hara and shecht him in front of the tzaddikim and in front of the rishoyim. So Marsha points out, really, when we say shechita, what we mean is Hashem will be completely mevatel his koyach. Tzaddikim nidma lahem tahar gavoya. To the tzaddikim, the Yetzer Hara will appear like a tall mountain. Rishoyim nidma lahem kachot asayra. And to the Rishoyim, the Yetzer Hara will appear like a thin little hair. Halolu boichin v'halolu boichin. And both groups are going to be crying at seeing that. Tzaddikim boichin v'oimim heyach yecholnu lichbesh asahora gavoya azeh. The tzaddikim are going to be crying and saying, how could we have conquered this great, tremendous mountain? Meaning, so Rashi says, when they're crying, is going to be they're going to cry in retrospect, thinking of how hard it was and how did we ever manage such a thing. Marsha says, okay, but what's the point of crying about the past? So he says, maybe you could say they're crying from Simcha, but the Gemara seems to be implying over here that they're crying from Tzar. So Marshall explains the vote is because after all, Hashem created the Yetzer Hara for a purpose. The purpose is that we should withstand him and get schar. We know, of course, the Alter Rebbe brings in a couple of places in Tanya from the Zohar. The Yetzer Hara himself really wants that. He's only there with the intention that we should overcome him, like the famous Marshall in the Zohar HaKadosh of the Zohar. So the Yetzer Hara has a purpose in order that we should beat him and get schar for that. So now the tzaddikim are going to be crying about the fact that that schus is being taken away from him. We have the expression in Hayom Yom where it says that one of the rabbeim said that when Mashiach comes, that we're going to miss the time of golus because then now we have a time to actually accomplish and get schar, and l'asid lover, it's not going to be like that. So Marsha explains that's why the tzaddikim are crying. That's what Marshall brings that the Yetzer Hara. Yeah, the Tov Ma'od is a Yetzer Hara. Yeah, so the tzaddikim are going to be crying over that goodness that Hashem, that potential goodness that Hashem created in the world in order for them to overcome it. Now that's being taken away, and the schar that goes with it is also being taken away. So there are different other explanations why they're crying about it. It's Yosef talks about over here that we know that a person would never be able to conquer and withstand the Yetzer Hara if Hashem didn't help him. So therefore, they're crying about, they're realizing the Yetzer Hara is this big, tremendous mountain, and they realize we never could have conquered it without Hashem's help. Then they're going to think, well, what schar do we deserve at this point? Then in that case, it comes out it wasn't really our own efforts anyway. Why are we even going to get schar? And that would be another reason why they're crying. The Aruch HaNer brings an interesting point. He says also another reason why the tzaddikim are crying is to be melamed schus on the Rishoyim. As we go on to say, the Rishoyim see the Yetzer Hara as a tiny threat, and they're going to cry and say, how could we not overcome it? But meanwhile, the tzaddikim are going to be crying on behalf of the Rishoyim. Like, you should realize it's taken not as easy as it looks now to you, Rishoyim. It really was a tremendous effort, and therefore that should be melamed schus on the Rishoyim, that the fact is that they didn't make that effort. So that's the tzaddikim. V'rishoyim boichin v'oimim heyach lo yachol nulich b'shut eschot asayir azeh. And the rishoyim are crying and saying, how could we not have conquered this little tiny threat? And in fact, both of them are true, because as the Gemara is going to go on to say, the Yetzer Hara starts off small and becomes big. So the tzaddikim see it as a higher gavoya. One explanation, in fact, is brought in Sifrei Moser. The tzaddikim see it as a higher gavoya because that's taka what it would have become if they hadn't conquered it in the first place. Meanwhile, the Rishoyim see it as a chot asayra because that is what it started out with. That is when they should have worked on it, and they could have easily overcome it. So according to that opinion, then that's why they're crying over the Yetzer Hara Shenerag is because of what they went through to do it, and because of the fact that they're losing their schar and for the future and all these other reasons. In fact, Hashem himself, Kav Yochel, is going to wonder along with them and wonder how was this possible. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, also talking about Yemos Mashiach. By the way, Marsha points out, you have the Yetzer Hara is the Malach of Esav, who lives in Har Seir. So Har Seir, the name Har Seir itself includes both of those things, Har, a mountain, and Seir, a hair, representing that the Yetzer Hara has those two aspects. Anyway, so the pasuk says, "Shenema ki pole be'enes she'edus amazev gomer." The pasuk says about the geula hamitzvah v'shleima, and even more so about the Marsha points out. In context, it's talking about the geula in general, but specifically the pasuk before it talks about we quoted yesterday the pasuk about the old men and women sitting in the streets of Yerushalayim. The next pasuk continues. Marsha brings the next pasuk there in Zechariah continues that there'll also be yelodim v'yelodis mesachkim b'chaviseha, young boys and girls playing in the streets. Now, yelodim v'yelodis can also mean older children. So what are they doing playing together in the streets? There's not a problem of a lack of tznius and a problem that it'll cause averus, but we're saying that it will happen because there won't be a Yetzer Hara. So now the pasuk continues, ki yipole v'eni she'eris ha'amazev v'gomer, the remnant of this people, the Jewish people who are then, are going to be amazed how this could be. And the pasuk continues, gam be'ena yipole. Hashem says, I'll also consider it an amazing thing. So it means Hashem is saying, Kav Yochel, I will also consider an amazing thing. How were the tzaddikim able to withstand the Yetzer Hara? Now Marashal says Hashem is not going to wonder about the Rishoyim why they couldn't, because the fact is that Hashem knows good and well that he created the Yetzer Hara as very powerful, that it can grow all the way to the size of a mountain. So it's going to be the Rishonim themselves are going to feel bad about it, but it's only the Tzaddikim that Hashem is going to say, Gam be'ena yipole, I myself, Kav Yochel, I'm surprised how would Taka with Tzaddikim able to withstand this powerful Yetzer Hara that I created. And in this connection, Omer Abasi, Yetzer Hara b'tchila doim l'chut shal buchya. The Yetzer Hara starts off like a thread of buchya. Now Rashi explains that means a spider web's thread, which is very small, very, very thin, and very easily breakable. The Oruch, the Rabbeinu Hananel and the Oruch give an explanation. They have a gear saying said kuchya, which means when you weave in cloth, you have the Erev thread. You have a shuttle, it's called, that you wind the Erev thread around it and you throw it back and forth. As you're weaving, that kind of thin thread is called chut shel buchya. So it starts off like that. All of a sudden, voice has ha'agola, and eventually, if a person doesn't conquer the Yetzer Hara and keeps on getting stronger and stronger, eventually it becomes like the ropes that are used to pull a wagon, very thick ropes. As you find the pasuk, Hoi Moshe Oven B'chavle Hashav, woe to those who pull Averis with the ropes of emptiness, of nothingness, B'chavois Ha'agola Chata, and they pull their Chatoim so Chavle Hashav suggests, in other words, it actually says, suggests strings that are nothing, insubstantial strings, like the spider webs thread or like the weaving thread. It's a nothing. And yet they're pulling their Averis along with that. And then they pull their Chatoim along with the ropes of a wagon, because eventually you have it adds up and eventually it becomes like a thick rope like that. So therefore, you have this idea. In other words, again, this goes with what we said before about the chutcha, about the chutasaira versus the har, that it grows and grows. The tzaddikim again are seeing how it would have been if they hadn't conquered it, and the rishonim are seeing how it was when they didn't bother conquering it. Getting back to Mashiach ben David and Mashiach ben Yosef, Tanan Abanan, the Gemara says we learn in the Braisa, Mashiach ben David sh'osid li'golos m'heir of Yamenu. So by the way, I forgot to mention that, when the Rambam brings these halachas, he doesn't even bring the concept of Mashiach ben Yosef, the Pashtus, because like the Reb Sadi Goin says, it's not an absolute necessity that there's going to need to be one, and the Rambam is focusing on things that it has to be a certain way. So Mashiach ben David sh'osid li'golos m'heir of Yamenu, Oymalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bni sh'al ma'at m'vakesh v'ani noisen l'cha, at my son, ask for whatever it is that you want, and I'll give it to you. Shenema is Kapitel Beis in Tilim says, and Kapitel Beis is talking about Mochemes Gog Magog. Lama Rog Shugoyim, the whole capital over there, is talking about Mochemes Gog Magog and Yoshev Hashemayim Yischak. Hashem laughs at them or whatever, and then the later Pesukim in it talk about Mashiach. Rashi on the Pesukim actually explains, and on a pshat level, it's talking about when David himself first became king, and the Plishtim are attacking the Jews, and Hashem helped David defeat them. But it's also Meramez on Moshiach and Melchamas Gog Magog. So Hashem says, my son, ask whatever you want. Ani noisim l'chon, I'll give you. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Asapra ochoik. I will tell about the rule. In other words, Rashi says, I will tell about the following matter, and I want it to be a choik. I want it to be something that everybody will remember. Hashem omer elai bni after v'goyim. Hashem said to me, you are my son. And he continues, shal mimeni v'etna goyim nachosecha. Ask for me. All you have to do is ask for me, and I will make the goyim be your inheritance, the nations be your inheritance, v'achuzoscha af se'aretz, and your estate will go all the way to the ends of the earth. So in other words, you ask, and I'll make that all the goyim will be subjugated by you. Even Shiroil Mashiach ben Yosef shenerag. But then when Mashiach ben David sees Mashiach ben Yosef is killed, Oyim Malafanav, he says, Rebbeinu Shalom, Eini Mevakesh Melchay Lachaim. All I'm asking you for is life, that I shouldn't be killed like he was. Oyim Malakadosh Baruch Hu. So Hashem says that you don't have to worry about. Ad shalay amadta or amauta, before you ever arose or before you ever said anything, kvar hisnabe alacha David abicha, your father, your ancestor David, already said a nevuah about that. Shenema, as you have a different capital, chayim sha'al mimcha nasat aloi, he asked life of you and you gave it to him. The point being, in other words, that Maharshal says that the fact is, we're saying, capital base, well, where do we actually find Mashiach, or David for that matter, asking for such a thing? So if Hashem is telling him to ask, we should find some record of it being done. Therefore, we're understanding that since we do have a different pasuk that says Chaim Sha'al Mincha, then that's we understand that instead of asking for Goyim Nachal Secha, etc., instead he's asking only for Chaim, that I shouldn't be killed, like Mashiach ben Yosef. And Hashem is saying that, because Maharsha points out, Kapitel Chafalef begins on Ratzeach Mizmor David. Kapitel Beis does not. So the Kapitel Achtilim were composed by David, but Kapitel Beis does not explicitly have David's name on it, whereas Kapitel Chafalef, which has the pasuk Chaim Sha'al Mincha, does, and that's why Hashem is saying that David already asked for this on your behalf. The Maharal, by the way, also has in his sefer Netzach Yisrael, which is a sefer all about the Gola, about the deeper ideas behind the Golos and the Gola. He has a whole discussion of this Gemara in one of the chapters over there. One thing he points out is that Yosef and Yehuda are like the heart and the brain of the Jewish people, respectively. Therefore, there has to be a Mashiach ben. Therefore, there's a Mashiach ben Yosef to stand in for the heart before there's a Mashiach ben David for the brain. But then we're saying over here the heart, Mashiach ben Yosef, gets killed. And meanwhile, Mashiach ben David continues to live because he's the centrality of what all the Jewish people are about, and al derech like Moach Shalat al Aleiv, and therefore he's the one who actually sees it through. One point is the Orach HaNer also makes the point that Hashem wants him. Why does Hashem tell him to ask? Why did he tell him Sha'al Mimcha, Sha'al Mimeni? Why doesn't Hashem just give it to him without asking? For one thing, because that'll demonstrate to the whole world that Mashiach and the Jewish people collectively are Hashem's child rather than Hashem's Eved. So like this, because you're an Eved, you don't necessarily give something to just because he asks, but a child you do. So therefore, when he asks for it, then it demonstrates that he has the Maila of a Ben. Getting back to the Yetzirah, the Gemara says, "Darash Rabbi Avira v'Tamer Rabbi Yisroel ben Levi, Rabbi Avira, or some say Rabbi Yisroel ben Levi Darshin, Sheva Shemus Yeshla the Yetzirah. The Yetzirah has seven names, and these represent. Marsha points out they represent. There are seven different Koychas Atuma. There are seven different types of Averas that I mentioned in Pirkei Avos, Shiva Gufei Avera, seven Puronias. You have all kinds of different things, all kinds of different negative things associated with the number seven, because in general we have Zelo, Masel, Selikim. So there are seven Midas of Kedusha, so therefore there are corresponding to that seven Midas of Klippa. There's places in my Maimonides Chassidus where it talks about, for example, the seven nations of Canaan represent one each of one of those. So therefore, corresponding to that is why the Yetzer Hara has seven names. By the way, Reb Reuven Margolius talks about here the Gemara is going to bring the seven names. This is only based on Psukim. Once you get into Medroshim and Zoyars and Maimonides Chazal and whatnot, you have a couple of dozen others. But just in terms of Psukim alone, you have seven. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kroi Ra, Hashem calls the Yetzer Hara bad, meaning exactly that. He's intrinsically evil. In other words, Shenemar ki Yetzer Lev HaAdam Ra Min Orav. The inclination of a person's heart is bad from his youth. In other words, Hashem created a person with a Yetzer Hara, and to begin with, a person starts out with that negative tendency. Before when we had about the two possibilities of whether the Hesped is about Mashiach ben Yosef or about the Yetzer Hara, the Aruch HaNer also points out, so we're calling him a Yochid and we're calling him a Bechor. In a way, each of them can be called that. Mashiach ben Yosef starts out as a Yochid. Then he's joined by Mashiach ben David. So he's a Yochid at first, and then he's the Bechor because he comes before him. Similarly, the Yetzer Hara starts out on a person first, and later on is joined by the Yetzer Tov, and in that sense also first he's a Yochid, and later on he's Bechor to the later ones. So now we're saying, so a person starts out with a Yetzer Hara. As we know, a person doesn't really get his Yetzer Tov until he's 13. So therefore, so the Yetzer of a person's heart is bad from the youth, from his youth. And Maharsha points out further on the Gemara is going to bring a pasuk that uses the word levov with two vases. We know when there are two vases, then you have one represents the Yetzer Tov and the other the Yetzer Hara. Here Hashem is saying a person starts out only with a Yetzer Hara, so therefore there's only one vase over here. Next, Moshe Kore Oro. Moshe calls the Yetzer Hara oral, the uncircumcised one, where the basic meaning of oral is a blockage, Rashi points out in a few places in Chumash. So the Yetzahara is an oral in the sense that he blocks a person from absorbing from absorbing Kedusha and absorbing Elikus the way he should. So Shenema Umaltimus Orlas Lavavchem, Moshe tells the Jewish people, you have to circumcise, you have to cut off the Orla of your heart, which means to cut out the Yetzahara from your heart. David Kore Tomei. David calls the Yetzahara the Tomei one. Shenema, he says, Lev Toho Broli Elikim. Hashem, create for me a pure heart, meaning Meklal De'ika Tomei. If he's asking for a pure heart, that implies that right now there's something of Tumah in there, namely the Yetzahara. Shloima Kore Soine. Shloima calls the Yetzahara the enemy. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Imroiv Soinacha Hachilehu Lochem. So first of all, Marsha points out, so far what we have is, we have Hashem is talking about, again, that a person has an inborn Yetzirah. It comes in even right when he's born, whereas the Yetzirah Tov comes only later. David is also saying, Lev Toher Broli Elikim, in the sense that, let me have only the one Lev of the Yetzirah Tov, rather than having the Lev Vav of Yetzirah Tov and Yetzirah. And meanwhile, Moshe is saying Maltimus Olas Levavchem, because with the two vases, because if you cut out the Yetzahara, you're also fixing up and improving the Yetzatoy. Al-Derech, he says, like you have by Shabbos, when you have the two Malachim that come, and we have, you know, if everything is set up beautifully, then nicely recovered Shabbos, then Malach Toiv says it should be this way next week, and Malach Ra, Unabal Koch Omen. So therefore, in that sense, Moshe is saying, Maltimus Olas Levavchem, and by getting rid of the Yetzahara, you'll also improve the Yetzatoy. So now Shlomo is calling him Soine, Shenema, Imroiv Soinacha Hachileu Lochem. If your enemy is hungry, feed him with bread. And if he's thirsty, give him water to drink. Because you're going to be heaping coals on his head. And Hashem will make him make peace with you. So literally, Hashem Yishalom Loch literally means Hashem will pay you back. But Al Tikri Yishalom Loch El Yashli Menu Loch. Don't read that Hashem will pay you back, but that Hashem will make him at peace with you. So what is this Halchileu Lochem and Ashkeu Mayim? Rashi explains that it means the bread and the water of Torah. We know that Torah, first of all, Lochem, Rashi explains, doesn't mean bread. It means the war of Torah. Distract you, Yetzahara. Get him busy with the war of Torah, and that way he has no time to be convincing you to do other things. And Ashkeu Mayim, give him the water of Torah to drink, and then the result is Yashli Menu Loch, that your Yetzahara will be at peace with you and won't be trying to constantly attack you and destroy you. That's how Rashi explains. Marsha says another point in it as well. The word lochem, it's true, does mean war, like Rashi says, but it also means bread. What it means is, in other words, after all, your Yetzirah is, in Chassidus, after all, we talk about the Yetzirah as what the Nefesh HaBahamas is what powers the Yetzirah. And the Nefesh HaBahamas includes the desire for a person's physical needs. A person needs to eat and needs to drink and needs to do other things that are necessary for him. Those are all desires from the Nefesh HaBahamas. So fine, you can't deny them completely. A person needs Gashmias in order to live. So go ahead, give him the bread, give him the water. In other words, you have to fulfill the needs of your Nefesh HaBahamas, but do it in a way that you're not indulging it, and that way Yashli Menu Loch, and that way he'll be at peace with you, because you're al-derech, like what you have in Hayom Yom. You don't fight with the body, you co-opt it and you use it in serving the Eibishter. So that's Shlomo. Next, Yishayo Kroy Michshol. Yishayo called the Yetzahara Michshol, the stumbling block. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Va'omar, Hashem says, Soilu, Soilu, pave and pave the way, meaning clear, Soilu, clear, or pave, or whatever the way, Panu Dorech, clear the way, Horimu Michshol Miderech Ami, take away the stumbling block from in front of my people, meaning, in other words, that Hashem is promising he's going to take away the Yetzirah. Marsha points out, first of all, it means we're talking about not such a big Aveira, it's more like something b'shoigig, and Hashem is promising that he'll get rid of that level of the Yetzirah as well. But also, it means, in other words, that you might have a small thing on the road that you don't even notice, and you end up tripping over it the same way, like we said before, that the Yetzirah starts out as this little tiny obstacle that you might not even notice, but and Hashem is promising to remove even that. Next, Yechezkel kore Evan. Yechezkel called the Yetzirah a stone. Shenem of Asiros, yes, leva Evan mibsarchem. Hashem promises, I'll take away the heart of stone from within you, and I'll give you instead a heart of flesh, which means right now a person has a heart of stone, which is insensitive to Elikus, and La'asid lava, there'll be a heart of flesh, which is sensitive and receptive to Elikus. Marsha says a little further on, the Gemara is going to talk about that. The next piece of Gemara is going to talk about that even if the Yetzer Hara is as strong as a stone, you can still shatter it and defeat it. So therefore, Yechezkel is calling a stone in token of that. And Yoyel called it Tzfoni, and the Navi Yoyel called it Tzfoni, which means the northern one, and also the hidden one. Shenema v'esat Tzfoni archik me'aleichem, as he brings a pasuk, Hashem says, I will take away the Tzfoni from you. In context, the pasuk is talking about there was a terrible plague of locusts in Eretz Yisrael, but as the Gemara is going to talk about, and we'll learn about it next time, Be'ez Hashem, that it's referring to the Yetzer Hara. And it's called Tzfoni in the sense that, among other things, because it's hidden inside a person, and therefore, and he doesn't even always realize what it's out to get him, and therefore, so all of these, among other things, they represent different aspects and different tactics of the Yetzer Hara, how he gets a person. There is, by the way, for example, a very interesting explanation in the Sefer Dvar Yom B'Yoma. He has a fascinating explanation. You know, we have a piyut that we say on Yom Kippur night and on Kol Nidre night. We have the piyut Ki Hineh Kachomer B'Yada Yotzer, where we compare ourselves in Hashem's hand to seven different kinds of things. So he has a fascinating explanation over there, relating that to this Gemara over here, where we have seven different names for the Yetzer Hara, representing also different stages in a person's life, different times the Yetzer Hara tries to get him in different ways, and each one was saying to Hashem, we're in your hands, so please help us. La bris habet, v'al tefan la yetzer, and don't turn to the yetzer who's trying to trip us up and then go and accuse us in front of you, but rather help us get rid of him. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'ola Chavez Shvat, the Chaim Mushka's Yotzeit. So talking about the women, just like by Yitzias Mitzrayim, as we know, Rashi brings that Tzidkonius Shabadon knew that Hashem is going to make Nisim for them, and therefore they took tambourines out of Mitzrayim. So it'll be by the Go'ola from this Golos Azar Achron that the Nitshe Yisrael Tzidkonius have to be certain, and for sure they are certain, that Teiko from Yad Mamash, the Go'ola Amitis Vashlema, is going to come. And already now, in these last moments of Golos, they're singing and having tambourines and dancing about the coming of the Golan Mitzvashlein. Yad Mamash. Continuing on halachas of Kriyas HaTorah, so you have earlier in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, he talks about the various dinim of what happens if you find a mistake in the Sefer Torah while you're learning. Now, if you find the mistake doing maftir, then it depends what kind of maftir it is. If it's the kind where you have to have a maftir because Chayv HaSayim, for example, Yom Tov, or Shabbos or Shchodesh, or Parshas Shkolim, or other times of things, then it's considered, then the din would be like in any other parasha, and you have the detailed dinim of what kind of mistake it is and when you have to take out another Sefer Torah versus not. But on a regular Shabbos, where Maftir is only rereading a few psukim from the end of the parasha that Shvi had read, so you're only doing that because of the covet of Torah, because the whole reason for Maftir in that case is people shouldn't think that Nevi'im are on the same level as Chumash. You're calling up seven people to learn from the Torah, and then you're calling up one to learn from Nevi'im, and people are going to think they're on an equal level, so it's really only for the covet of Torah. So then you don't take out another Sefer Torah, you just finish with the current Sefer Torah. You don't make, then the Maftir would not make the last bracha. He would still say the Haftorah with the brachas. If you find the psul before he made the first bracha, then the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says, then you should take out another Sefer Torah. We're talking about once he made the first bracha, then already you shouldn't. If there's no other Sefer Torah, then whoever got the last aliyah will say the Haftorah with the brachas. And if they hadn't yet said the Kaddish, then they'll say it after the Haftorah, because again, you're not Yotze, the proper number of Kodim, because you don't have the eighth Kodah over here.